So I've had a lot of these. I don't know if you guys want to take it home.
Nua Dufek loves to talk about food.
Bittermelon. That's how they cook bittermelon.
Especially Hmong food.
Mostly it's ground pork, or mostly you can do a ground chicken. This is the cucumbers that I was talking about. This is a Hmong cucumber.
Nua was born in Laos, but when she was 12, moved to good old Green Bay, Wisconsin. Today, we are together on Maple Ave in downtown Green Bay, and we're sitting in tall grass next to one of the city's community garden sites. There's a factory across the street and train tracks running nearby. The gardens are bare right now, and the soil is rocky. It's clear it's still spring in Wisconsin because not much of anything is growing. Nua introduces me to Chow, and she is one of the many, many Hmong gardeners who will garden here this year.
This is what mostly she grows. She grows the collard greens. This is, what is that? Sugar snappy leaves. Lemongrass? Yeah, she plants a lot of lemongrass.
Chow and Nua keep a lot of their traditional food practices alive in this very garden. They also have new favorites that they've started here, like spring rolls. And I've been told Nua makes delicious spring rolls.
I do that too.
Okay, I want to make spring rolls. What is the secret to
the hands?
I need to find new hands.
Just kidding. When you dice, you have to really dice very fine to order, because you know the spring roll wraps, it's not that big, only this big. So make sure that you dice your vegetables are very fine, so you can just kind of put a little bit each in there and then just wrap it.
What do you like to put in your spring rolls?
Spring roll, I pretty much put a lot of stuff. Cucumber, carrots, lettuce.
My goodness, there are few things in the world I love more than food. And it turns out that we all eat. But no matter where you are from, food is about so much more than eating. Food is home. But not everyone has the same access to food. Some folks can't get fresh fruits and veggies. Others don't have money to make their own choices on what they eat. Some don't have space to grow food. And some, like Nua, are far from home, and it's a challenge just to find the foods they love. Community gardens, like the one we met in, aren't a fix-all to these problems. But they do address some issues. And they tell a story, like how people share space, how we cultivate food and relationships across cultures, and how little plots of land can make a big impact in people's lives.
So it really is a place for people to come together and meet people. Gardening is such a universal activity that people of all different backgrounds do, and so it's really special that they can come together and be together in that space. I don't think there's a lot of other spaces like that in the community.
I'm Jimmy Gutierrez, host of Human Powered, a podcast from Wisconsin Humanities and Love Wisconsin about how people make places better. Now, I'm from Milwaukee, but my food home spans from my abuelita's tamales to charnina, or Polish blood soup. And something I've learned from Bayfield to Madison is that people all over Wisconsin have their own food homes. Today, we are looking at the ways community gardens sustain that. We're going to hear how these gardens started, meet some of the people working in them, and think about the political and environmental impacts of setting aside land for people to grow their own food. Today, we're starting in Green Bay with Karen Early.
I mean, gardening is like, what's there not to like about gardening if you like to work, okay? I mean, you get to go out and get food and then eat it. Like, pick and eat.
Karen means what she says. I can say this because she showed up to our interview with an early harvest of green onions. But this passion of hers to grow things started way back when she was little, in her grandmother's flower garden.
And I loved learning which was a weed and what was a flower, you know? And then I learned that there were these weeds in her garden that were like vegetables that I could eat. Lamb's quarter and pig's weed, you know, and nettles.
Karen's interest in food eventually led to a career in nutrition, which put her on the front lines of debates about food security in the 80s and 90s. Basically, people needed more access to healthy foods. But during the Reagan administration, federal funding for food programs was drastically reduced. Lots of people, lots of poor people and people of color, were becoming more and more food insecure. To compensate for the lack of federal funds, everyday people started to take care of themselves. Soup kitchens, pantries, and food banks started popping up everywhere, including in Green Bay. As a matter of fact, over 90% of all food banks started after 1981. Eventually, the USDA developed a nationwide survey to try to get a handle on the problem. And that survey came across Karen Early's desk. She read it, added some questions, and went out to learn what was happening at the food pantries in her community.
Then we asked, what kind of strategies might help you have enough food? And we had a list of six or seven sort of things. And they had to do with affordable housing, affordable utilities, improved transportation, having a grocery store nearby, learning how to budget, or having a garden. And we learned that 41% of the people who were food insecure said, oh yeah, having a garden would really help me. So we thought, oh, we need to bring gardens to people. It's hard for us to do something about housing, you know, and utilities, but the third highest strategy that people were requesting was gardens.
In 1994, understanding all of this, Karen went to the city. They gave her a vacant lot and said she could start a community garden. That first year, they had six families show up. 3 years later, in 1997, there were 176 families working across four gardens. This summer, there will be 250 families working on 12 different garden plots, the most people in the program's history. One of the people that will be working in the garden this year is Chow. She's been a community gardener for over 20 years. She's originally from Laos, a place where farming and gardening were a central part of her culture. Nua interpreted for us.
Back in Laos, we work in the because of the Hmong population, they all live in the mountain. So mostly you just use your hands and your shovel to work.
Chow started gardening as a kid in those mountains.
Since when I was little, as soon as I know how to dig, that's how I start my garden. And yes, I do remember back in the homeland.
And she still has the tools from back home.
Okay, yes, we do. I do remember that. Because we still have some pictures back there. And also when I arrived to the United States, I actually had some of my own tools or some tools that belong to my parents. And yes, I still remember a lot of those memories.
In Green Bay, Chow grows some of her favorite vegetables.
Yeah, okay. Cucumber, zucchini, or pumpkin, and also green beans.
And turns them into some amazing desserts.
Okay, so now, especially the cucumber, we wait until it's a little bit bigger, and we cut it in half. Most of the time, we kind of remove the seed, but sometimes we keep the seed, and we take a spoon and scrape like that until really fine, you add sugar in there. So we eat it like a dessert.
When Chow first came to Green Bay 40 years ago, the Hmong community was much smaller and less connected.
Okay. She said it was very hard. It's about, 40 years ago when we first arrived. It is very hard no matter where you are. But now, about 10 years ago, it's a lot better. Because a lot of times you have family, you have relatives, and so it's much easier now than 40 years ago. Mm-hmm.
After the first few gardening seasons, some Hmong gardeners asked for larger plots. They wanted to feed their families, sure, but they also wanted to sell their food. Karen secured a federal grant to work with immigrant communities and started an 18-acre garden called Market Gardens. Finding garden space was the easy part. The hard part was finding a home for new immigrant vendors.
The Saturday market downtown Green Bay was full and they didn't really have room to expand. They added, I think, 6 more stalls, but then we're like, we have to start another market. So we started a Wednesday night market downtown. First I think in a church lot, and then it was at a restaurant lot, and then it was at a park. And now it's the third largest market in the state.
The Market Gardens project became a launch pad for Hmong business owners. Since then, the Hmong food culture in Green Bay has exploded. There are now at least 6 Hmong grocery stores in the city, and a sizable community of Hmong gardeners still using the community gardens. This includes a gardener named Sarah Lee. And for her, just being in the soil connects her back to family.
When we got here, we don't have much. We don't know where to gardening. Our sponsors, they are American sponsors. So they have, in the backyard, we will have a little plot. So we plant a little bit in the back of the backyard.
Today, Sarah tends a community plot alongside 3 other family members.
Yeah, usually I help them weed out their garden. So, yeah, my sister-in-law is next to me, and my daughter is next to me to the other one. And then my sister-in-law's mother is next to my daughter. So I usually end up doing the 4 plots together.
This family connection bit is huge. But if you already have enough family time, gardening is also a great way to be alone. It's peaceful, even meditative.
The reason why I like gardening is really peaceful. Mm-hmm. I have a nephew, and his wife came all the way from Madison, and she came to my garden. She said she needs some cilantro. I said, well, you know, it's a little bit over season. You can go to my garden to see what you could pick. And then she came, and she stopped picking my peas. I keep up picking them. I say, oh, do you like to eat those? No, I just feel so peaceful by picking this. And it is peaceful.
Yeah.
Nobody talks to you. Nobody bothers you. The plants don't talk back to you. Yeah. So it's peaceful.
For area gardener Pedro Perez, he feels this deeply. When he's in the garden, something he loves to do a few times a week, he says it transports him. Alma Torres interpreted for him.
It's
a very calm, and I can say a place of tranquility. It is part.
Yeah, a la vez es parte de que estés activo tú haciendo pues un poco de ejercicio y activo porque aquí son las cubetas que son más grandes que esa la agua la carga uno aquí no usa una manguera aquí.
It also keeps you active. I would say even physically active. We have to carry buckets of water. There's no hose, so it also keeps us not only keeps our mind in a peaceful setting, but also our body. I would say a little bit of exercise.
Pedro has lived in the area for 17 years. But before that, he was in California and Mexico, 2 very different growing climates than Wisconsin's. Pedro says his food home, the food that connects him back to those places, is salsa.
Es la salsa de tomate.
I would say tomatoes. Tomato salsa is one of the foods that I really identify with.
La salsa es buen casi todas las comidas.
Salsa basically goes in every single food.
So Pedro needs his tomato plants to be hardy. And he's found Wisconsin's shorter growing season does have some benefits.
Pero aquí este clima no se da muy bien el tomate y no... No se emplaga, como que el frío lo ayuda.
And actually, this type of weather really helps tomato grow. It doesn't allow so much plagues to actually attack it. It seems like the cold allows the tomato to grow a little bit better.
Tomatoes grow better, but the seasons are shorter. So Pedro hustles to maximize the growing time.
Pues unos 3-4 días por semana.
I would say around 3-4 days per week.
A veces...
Maybe 2-3 hours per day.
So you're like a master gardener.
So usted es un maestro en la jardinería.
No, pues es que si no trabaja uno, no cosecha.
If we don't work, obviously we will not be able to harvest our items.
He even says that he can grow and can food for a whole year just through that garden plot.
Lo que cosecho más, lo enlato o lo refrigero para, me dura todo el año a veces.
I can sometimes store it, and I refrigerate it so it can last me the whole entire year.
Hey, this is Jade. I'm a producer on the show. Human Powered is made possible by Wisconsin Humanities. It's a nonprofit organization with a mission to inspire civic participation and individual imagination. The people we've met this season have all created projects that received a grant to strengthen community life. You can learn more about the grant program and grant deadlines and requirements on our website at wisconsinhumanities.org. Who knows? Maybe we'll hear about your project in season two.
As you might have picked up by now, gardeners here rely on this land. It puts food in their kitchens and pantries throughout the year. But the truth about community gardens is that they can disappear at almost any time. And in Brown County, they almost did.
I looked at the information and it said community gardens often hit crises, and which we had done, because of lack of funding. Government funding is cyclical, and it comes and goes. You know, you hit a recession and all of a sudden gardens aren't on the priority list anymore. And in 2012, the federal funding finally failed and the grant funding that the gardens had been trying to piece together.
You could just tell us what your nickname is and how did you get it? Because I want that story. So bad.
Are you talking about the garden diva?
1,000%.
All right. So I think I came off as a diva because I kind of say, no, this is the way it needs to happen in order to grow, or you need to grow because you need inclusivity. And so you kind of just keep following the data and you kind of keep pushing.
Cheryl Williams is the project manager for a healthcare organization. She also volunteers in the gardens. And depending on who you asked, might have saved them. In 2012, she was on sabbatical from work and looking to get more involved in community. So she asked a friend for some advice.
And he said, well, our community gardens are going under and about 200 immigrant families aren't going to be able to raise food this summer. And having come from a family where my grandmother had a big garden, and I literally and viscerally could see what that meant in my mind's eye, that, you know, there weren't going to be fruits and vegetables coming out of that, and that that would mean real things for real people.
So Cheryl started learning about how the gardens work, starting with where they are and where they aren't. Because many of the earliest plots, including some of the ones Karen Early worked on, are now gone.
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time with community gardens. We lose land to development pressure all the time.
One reason is simple. Community gardens are on borrowed land, vacant lots that are waiting to be developed and generate tax revenue.
What I've found as I sit in these community meetings are that the cities are not wanting the liability of owning land in general. They want it out and usable by the public, and ideally to generate tax base if it's in a commercial area.
Cheryl started working with the city to identify plots that don't have much commercial value, pocket parks and pieces of land on federal flood maps.
So it was a vacant lot. It had been deemed a federal floodplain. So, you know, in a non-commercial area, it really had no future, and it was collecting litter. And so in order to beautify that neighborhood, to help, you know, give a focal point back to the neighborhood, the city, you know, gave us the land, they eased our way, and they developed a beautiful garden.
The project has also found success working with private landowners, places like churches or even light industrial sites. The garden on Main and Augusta, where we met Chao, Sarah, and Pedro, it's now one of the oldest gardens in the program, and it's owned by a plastics factory.
So they, adjacent to their plant, have a spot, and they like to see land utilized to its fullest. And there in the shadow of the Leo Frigo Bridge and a railroad track, you know, within viewing distance is this beautiful old community garden. And it's just a beautiful thing.
But not everyone thinks this is a beautiful thing. Because even once you get the land, not everyone in the community wants the gardeners there. Take the market gardens. When they opened in 2000, there was a significant pushback from white neighbors. There were worries about traffic or quote-unquote security. It's clear that race was an issue. One woman even told the local paper, "These people are not our next-door neighbors." There are other stories like this around Green Bay. There used to be a plot for the Latinx community and a soul food garden for the Black community. And once these gardens shut down, some displaced gardeners never returned to the program. But believe it or not, not every garden closure is a tragedy. One garden closed because Habitat for Humanity put up some affordable housing. Another might be closing because a new childcare center is being built. Still, this is America, and some of the racist undertones persist in the community, and Cheryl hears them.
The facts of what they're concerned about, and I think it often gets put in racial tones, but if you dig down there, it's often about lack of control and just the volume of additional people, maybe more than it is about the race of people.
But once the gardens open up, people seem to change their mind.
One of the churches, I actually saw some people out walking. I'm like, tell me how you feel about the garden being here. Because I'd heard early on that there was some concern. And they were like, are you kidding? Best neighbor ever. Like this, I love this. I love everything about this. Do more of it.
According to Cheryl's data, no program does so much on such a small budget.
You are getting food to your lowest income individuals. You're empowering them to be involved with their own food security. Show me any program you have that does that, that also beautifies your neighborhoods, that brings health and well-being in so many dimensions. And they increase community connection.
But there was one missing piece, someone to hold the whole thing together. A person whose job is not contingent on the whims of federal funds. Karen asked the city and the county to fund a full-time garden coordinator to run the program, and they said yes.
I love being outside, and I think that was an important part of this. And then the multiculturalism of the gardens was really interesting to me, too, that people of all different backgrounds participate in the program.
Margaret Franchino has been working full-time as the Brown County Community Garden Coordinator for the last 8 years. She started through the AmeriCorps program, but has been preparing for this job for much longer.
My family volunteered for the Madison Area Food Pantry Gardens. So weekly throughout the summer, we'd go and there was a big like acre garden that we helped with. And then all the food that was harvested went to food pantries.
She was doing that from when she was 8 all the way through college. But that doesn't necessarily mean that she liked it.
I was a very, very whiny gardener when I was a child. I did not like it. It was hot and buggy. And I think, you know, underneath I must have liked it because here I am. But for many years, you know, my mom would drag us and we'd take really long water breaks in the car. And it's like, so, but as time went on, I think, you know, and I think the people who are doing it, I really respected and could see as I got older the benefit of it and what we were doing.
That whiny gardener now lays the groundwork for others to grow what they need in Brown County.
We prepare the land and provide water, and then they're responsible for planting, weeding, watering, taking care of the spot, and then can do whatever they want with what they harvest. So most people are just growing for their own families. Some people grow to donate to food pantries. Some people grow to sell. Really varies from gardener to gardener.
A big part of a successful garden is building relationships. In fact, this whole episode is based on Margaret's relationships with folks like Nua Chow, Sarah, and Pedro.
You know, I meet the most people out in the gardens, you know, just kind of organically being there and crossing paths with people. But it's just so interesting to hear, especially because so many of our gardeners are immigrants and are refugees. Just hearing their stories and what gardening means to them and their gardening background. I mean, a vast majority of them are much better gardeners than I am. And so a lot to learn from them.
In this spirit, Margaret has been running events to showcase the diversity of people and foods. Let's not forget about the food that comes from these gardens. This includes an open house with food samples like Nua's spring rolls.
So people could kind of stop by and build community that way. And I think we did see that, and people respond in their evaluations that it really was a chance to learn about different cultures. And one person said like it helped them feel less suspicious and things like that. So any feedback like that is good to have. So
this year, Margaret is reaching out directly to some of those communities that the garden has lost over the years.
I connected with the mosque a couple years ago, and we recruited a number of Somali families, but like to a family, they've moved away since. So we have lost that population. And then we had like a church that mostly had black community members as well. And we've just lost people over the years. So we don't have very many black gardeners anymore. So we were making really concerted effort this year to reach out to more black community members as well.
In Brown County, a community health improvement program identifies community gardens under a social inclusion category, not under food. That's how much they view gardens as community builders. Cheryl Williams, the garden diva, agrees.
It's about the social cohesion that gardens create when you're, you know, quietly gardening your plot next to a person who doesn't look like you day after day. And what people find out is if you're there growing your food, I'm interested in food, you're interested in food, and we're interested in food together, and that's something we have in common.
Community gardens sprouted here in Brown County over 25 years ago. There was a time when they were on rocky soil, but it turns out even rocky soil can produce harvest. Through it all, community has been built, stories and culture has been shared, and the work continues.
The beautiful thing is you get gardens going at the beginning of the year and gardeners grow food. And so no matter what happens in the gardens, one of the things Margaret and I look at each other and say, well, are people growing food? Well, then what we need to happen is happening. You know, all these other things can be a problem. As long as people are growing food, we're good. The community gardens have a 25-year history, right? But people have been gardening forever. And right now we are, you know, we're all carrying our torch in our time for community gardens and for food security. And it's just, we're all doing our part.
Wisconsin Humanities and Love Wisconsin have teamed up to make 6 monthly episodes of Human Powered because we believe that sharing stories about people making their communities better helps us all imagine what is possible. Human Powered is produced by Craig Ely and Jade Iseri Ramos at Field Noise Soundworks, along with Jessica Becker. Story editing by Jen Rubin. Special thanks to Amanda Chu and Allison Hellenbrand, and to our interpreters Alma Torres and Nua Dufek. Dina Wartzel and Bridgetta Waller are executive producers. This show is mixed by Rob Byers, Johnny Vince Evans, and Michael Raphael of Final V2. I'm your host, Jimmy Gutierrez. If you know a gardener or someone else who would really enjoy this episode, please share it with them. And be sure to subscribe to our series wherever you get your podcasts so you can hear all of them. Visit Wisconsin Humanities at wisconsinhumanities.org and Love Wisconsin at lovewi.com for more information about this episode and our work.